Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, your basement isn't the only place water can get into your home. Today we're going to be talking about leaky roofs and masonry and what you can do about it with our guest, home improvement specialist John Freiberger, back with us once again. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, but we'll talk to him about what you can do to protect your home from water damage, and we could just say above ground water damage, and of course answer your other home improvement questions as well as we move along here. So, problems with a leaky roof, maybe? What questions do you have about improving drainage, maybe on your around your siding? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And John Freiberger, welcome back.
Glad to be back, Larry.
Where are you most likely to see above ground water leaks?
Well, that's a good question. It seems that the biggest problem we're having, other than, you know, an old worn out roof is an old worn out roof.
Sure.
But the systemic problems seem to be at windows. And we are getting a lot of air and water leaking around windows. And of course, if it leaks air, yeah, it can leak water.
Of course.
All we need is a little bit of wind or depressurization across the interface.
So that's going to create a lot of problems.
Well, it is, because once the water gets in there, well, you get a few stains on your drywall, but the big problem is what happens inside the walls. Now, if this is an old, old house like mine, it's made out of wood, white pine. You know, they made boats out of white pine.
Yeah.
Survives a lot. But a new house made out of oriented strand board or something like that, that absorbs water easily and grows fungal growth easily and therefore decays, is we will get areas around windows with significant amounts of decay. And, of course, if we get decay, we get mold. So then we've got a compound problem. We've got an air quality problem because we've got air blowing into the house, bringing mold spores in, plus we've got decay going on. And you don't maybe see a lot of evidence until it's really bad.
And that's the issue. How do you, you know, just finding out where the darn stuff's coming in?
Well, that's one of the things we should probably talk about today is how do you really inspect your house for moisture? And, of course, one thing, now, first, we can put some science behind it. Right? We've not had a program yet where we haven't talked about focus on energy and having your house analyzed. And when we do a blower door test where they come in, put this big fan in your front door and depressurize your house, you are going to find the air leaks. And the air leaks can also be the water leaks. So by spending $400 to $500 on a good energy inspection, you can really not only get information on how to keep your house more comfortable by improving the insulation and stopping air leaks, but you can also assure yourself that your walls are not taking in a lot of moisture and we don't have decay going on.
Yeah. When it comes to the roofs, where do you see the leaks with roofs?
A lot of, on a newer house, Larry, we have these complicated roofs.
You know,
1950s ranch house, that's great. You know, there's no step flashing, there's no dormers, there's no nothing. There's just the top of the roof and the bottom of the roof and the drip edge and all the water runs off. Now we've got these Norman chateaus and these Tudor revivals and things with all these complicated roofs and the valley that comes down against the siding. And the architects are not good friends of roofers, I would say. The architect sort of designs it to be pretty. Then the roofer's got to figure out how it's not going to leak. And a lot of times the roofer can't figure out how it's not going to leak. So we end up getting leaks.
And what do we do when we get – I mean, you got to go back in and
– That's one of the big problems with roofs, Larry, is often on siding we can find things, especially in the winter. The winter is great. Of course, winter in Wisconsin is 6 months, so we've got 6 months where we can really use a thermal camera in Wisconsin, and we can look for cold spots in the wall. So we find cold spots around the window. We probably know there's air coming in, but if we find that persisting down below, then we know that that wall is wet because we're going to have more heat transfer. But how do you do that on a roof? Well, it's very, very, very difficult to do it on a roof. And usually what we're having to do is we're having to do some mechanical testing. So we're going to have to get a moisture meter in there. which means we're lifting up shingles or cutting holes in membrane roof. So we're doing, this is sort of like exploratory surgery, and it gets to be extremely difficult. We have a listener who had a roof put on his house in the winter with the roofing panels, and they didn't get the snow out, and now he has water dripping into his house. And I just talked to him by email yesterday. And the only way to really figure out what's going on is going to be to drill some holes, locate the water, try to figure out what's going on. So roofs are really a particular problem. So when we're getting a new roof put on a house, we need to be really careful. And you've heard me say this, I think, on every program. If you're having GAF Timberline shingles put on your house, go to GAF, download the instructions, hand a copy to the roofing contractor, show him your copy, and say, I'm watching.
Yeah.
And ask him if he has any questions. Say, do you know how to treat that valley up there against the dormer? Well, if not, I'm going to call technical support at GAF and send them a picture, and they're going to say, here's how far you should run the ice and water shield up. So what we've got to start doing, we've got to educate our homeowners, because what we're finding, Larry, is the contractors are not educated. It's not that they're bad people, but a lot of them just do not have adequate training. And materials are changing all of the time. So one of the things that we want to do on this program is always tell people, know as much as the contractor. Now, you don't have the skills, for the hammer and,
right,
and nail set, and you don't have the pneumatic nail and all that stuff. But you at least can look up the instructions so you know how something is to be done right, so that when everything is done, everybody's happy and your warranty is good and you never have to think about that particular roof again.
Well, we have roof questions here. Eugene and Viola has one, I believe. Eugene, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. I'm getting ready to put a roof on a house next year. There's okay. 7 gables on the house, and it would be about 30 square. Now, there's one roof on there. Can I put a second roof over, and would the warranty be any good? And I'm using architectural shingles.
Okay, you're using a laminated shingle. Do you know which company you're using?
No,
okay.
I don't. I haven't looked at that yet, but I'll be using architectural shingles, and I can put it on myself.
Okay, you're a brave man if this is a typical Victorian roof.
7 gables.
7 gables. Remember your fall protection. Now, I'm going to try to remember what the code says in Wisconsin, but I believe what the code says in Wisconsin is that you can put 2 layers of roofing on. If you go more than 2 layers, you have to have somebody certify that the roof structure is adequate to take the dead load. So you should be fine with 2. Now, what was the original roof on this house, Eugene? Was it wood shingles or was it asphalt?
Originally it was wood shingles, and I had another roof put on. They had it taken off about 12, 13 years ago. Mistake I made was I let them put 3 tab shingles on.
Yep.
And that was, and I'm paying for it right now.
Right.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Had you put the right shingle on back then, you would still have another 20 to 30 years of roof. So do check out the warranties. There are some companies like GAF, George Alfred Fred, where you can get a lifetime warranty. If you're putting them on yourself, you can't get the lifetime labor warranty, but you can get the lifetime material warranty. And GAF, I know, has very good installation instructions. So as we just said, be sure to download those. The weight of those shingles per square foot is going to be noted on the bundle, 4.85 pounds or 5.25 pounds or whatever. But unless you have some problems with the roof now, you should be in pretty good shape. Now, it's good to go in the attic. If it's an old Victorian, you probably just have 2x4 rafters, but maybe they're 2x6s. But you want to just inspect the attic. You want to look at every rafter, make sure there's no cracks, that there's no bowing. Look at the connections where they're put together. If you have any doubts, and you may want to add some collar ties or add some other fasteners and things to make sure that that roof stays nice and tight. So do it right. And you literally, Eugene, may not have to think about shingles again for the rest of your life.
There you go, Eugene. Thank you so much for calling. Well, what about Marty in Palmyra? Hi, Marty.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a slate tile roof contractor. I've been doing it for probably 40 years now. And just came across something the other day. A house has a conical turret of the front door, slate roof, and there's signs of moisture on the interior all around on all sides of this turret where it makes the peak. So I sent men out there. We looked at the, there's a copper turret cap on top of this. Solder seams fine, lap seems fine over the slate. Could it be moisture accumulated on the inside up near the top of this piece? They can't get out.
You're breaking up, Marty. We're having a little bit of trouble, but we have a turret roof.
Turret roof with now, is this real slate or is this the asbestos type or
no,
an artificial slate?
It's actual slate.
Okay. And how old is the roof, Marty?
18 years old.
18 years old. Okay. And was it completely wrapped with a membrane before the slate was put on?
I'm coming into this because the flat roof is leaking. And then while I was talking with the homeowner, he mentioned to me about this turret. So I told him, I said, I want to take this copper decorative cap off. And did they open up the sheathing at the top or is it sealed tight? And my thought being, if it isn't, that we open it up like any kind of a roof so you can allow air to pass through. And if that's so, would the moisture that collects on the inside, would it be able to get through the drywall and then work its way out because of the opening we've created?
Maybe. Again, this is if it were winter, we'd be able to do some thermal imaging and see how moist that wall is. But I think you're going to have to do, as we said earlier, a little bit of exploratory surgery to see what's going on. So we've got a finished room behind this. So we could have condensation issues if this is on an upper floor and an area that may get colder than much of the rest of the house. And that is the first part of the house where we're going to get condensation. So the question is, does this get wet only in the winter or get wet in the summer? If it only gets wet in the winter, then, as you suspect, condensation is our issue.
Do they know? I guess, maybe we lost Marty.
Did we lose Marty?
Yeah.
Well, Marty, I think you've got to check with the owners and see what the history is. When do they notice this? By looking, if you can get into the ceiling, by looking at the type of spots, you should be able to tell whether it's condensation dripping or not. There are going to be nails coming through the sheathing. If those nails are all rusty and have gray rings around them, that's condensation. If you see streaks of water, well, then that is a roof leak. And, of course, you could have both.
Yeah, you could have both. There you go, Marty. Thanks so much for calling. Stephanie in Lodi, it's your turn.
Hello. I live in a historic home. The first floor has a flat rubber roof, and then the rest of the house has, you know, a more traditional roof. And we do experience some leaking on that flat rubber roof. We've had several people come out and have a look, but everybody just gives us a quote and tells us to replace the roof, but nobody has actually told us where the leaking is coming from. And a previous comment about the focus on energy and figuring out where, you know, air is coming in and where moisture is coming in really piqued my interest. We've never thought of doing a focus on energy evaluation because our house is 135 years old. We know it's, you know, horribly inefficient. But do you think that it would be worth it to have something like that done to help us figure out where the leak's coming from rather than just replacing the roof when perhaps the leaking could be coming from where that roof butts up against the rest of the house?
Yes. My house was built in 1850. And I heat the house for less than 50 cents a square foot. And I've not done full upgrades on it, but I've upgraded a great deal. Now, you could have multiple things going on with that flat roof. If we don't have enough insulation up there, we could be having condensation up there. We really need to have about R50 insulation. Now, of course, we can add insulation over the top of the existing roof and put a new roof on top of that. So there's a lot of good ways of figuring that out. But I think spending the $400 to $500 for an energy inspection would really be helpful. Again, it's summer. I like to do them in the winter. But maybe you can get somebody who will come and do a blower door test for now. And you're a good roofer should be able to figure out what is in that roofer insulation. Now, it's probably what we call interstitial space, the insulation is between the rafters. The rafters, of course, are going to transfer all kinds of cold because wood is like 1.4 per inch or something. So I would do some investigation. If that roof has to be replaced, that is your opportunity to air seal it and to make it well insulated, and suddenly the room underneath that roof may be the warmest one in the house. But you'll get information on the rest of the house too. I mean, we do a lot of retrofit design on old houses, but start with some science so you know what you really got for leaking.
There you go, Stephanie. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin registered home inspector, his business Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement today and zeroed in a little on above ground water leakage with our guest, John Freiberger. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your call. John, before I even forget about it, you have a website that has a lot of good information, and it's set up really for Wisconsin Public Radio listeners.
Indeed it is. Educated Homeowner will get you there. And if you want information on siding, go to the folder that says siding, click on it, and you will find various articles, cross-sectional drawings, etc. in there. And that is meant to be useful both to homeowners and to contractors.
And again, the site is called?
Educated Homeowner. And Larry, I can't remember whether it's .net or we always have to look it up, don't we? I should know that.
Dave Potratz, our engineer, will look it up while we're talking. Educated Homeowner. Dot something.
We'll it's either find .net it. Or .com or .org, but we'll
get it.
We'll have Dave find that for us.
All right. In the meantime, Jeff in West Salem has something for us. Hi.
Hey there, guys. Let me preface the question by saying I was in construction, a carpenter, for about 20, 25 years. So we have a roof, and I believe the roof edge was probably installed improperly, and there's this around the perimeter of the fascia. It's cupped on the lower course or two of shingles, which prevents the water from, you know, really flowing off the roof. Consequently, we're getting water coming behind the gutters and even through the soffit.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
So this is this one of these houses where you've got like a 6-12 pitch and then it flares down to like a 2 or 3-12 pitch 2 feet from the edge?
I think it's probably 3.5-4 at the most per pitch.
But flatter towards the edges?
It's cupped at the edges.
It's cupped. Okay, the shingles are cupped. How old are these? How old are these shingles, Jeff?
They're architectural shingles. We just bought the house in September,
mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing they're probably 10, maybe 12 years old.
Hmm. Well, this is one I don't think we can analyze on the radio. It's one of these things where we've got to see it. Those shingles should not be cupping, not at 10 years of age, if they are a good quality. So the question is, I mean, usually houses have got a few shingles laying around someplace. You know, they're in the garage under the workbench or something or other. I think we need to identify what these shingles are and see if they happen to be shingles that have a recall on them. We have had a lot of shingle recalls. One reason that I keep referring to GAF is I don't know of any recalls at GAF, but everybody else seems to have made a production mistake at some point. So let's see if we can possibly identify what those shingles are and see if there's a defect, because they simply shouldn't be cupping. And if we're getting water under these shingles, then we've got a problem. Maybe the ice and water shield was not put on the edge. If you're in an area where you can go to the local building inspector and try to see if a permit was pulled and see who did the work, that might be another way of investigating, but I think you're going to have to do a little bit of investigation. You may have a warranty issue there with the shingle manufacturer, or it may have simply been poor workmanship.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. So do a little bit of investigation in those two ways. Try to identify who did the work and what did they work with, and then investigate those products.
Good luck, Jeff. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, we have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Eric in Sussex up next. Your turn. Hi, Eric. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. There is a product that's out now that's a variation on structural insulating panels called nail base or nail board.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if your guest has any opinion about how that stuff works. How difficult is it to install correctly? What's your opinion about using that on the roof and potentially on walls outside as well?
It is available both for roofs and walls. The one I specify most frequently is from Kurt Building, Kurt Building Products, Kurt and KURT. I believe they're still a public radio sponsor as well. And they make a what is nice about it is they make a vented nail base, so you don't end up with a hot roof, though the wall system does not have venting behind it. And you can order it in various you can put various thicknesses of foam down and then put I can't remember what their standard is, but if you go to their website, there's a lot of information. It is fairly easy to put on. We just have to make sure that the nails actually hit the rafters or the trusses so that things are secure. We have to keep an eye on the weather so we don't have Mike's problem up in Arcadia with the leaking coming through because it was put on during bad weather. Many roofers do know how to do it. Again, you will be able to get the installation instructions, so you can certainly help educate the roofer. But I find that they are an excellent way of treating some otherwise fairly intractable problems, such as a 1950s mid-century modern house with a big cathedral ceiling, or your cottage that has a nice exposed pine ceiling on the principal rafters, but 2 inches of insulation. So I would do some investigation. A couple different companies make them. We've had extremely good success. I have not had a call back on any of the projects where we have specified that material. And I think it's probably been at least 20 years that we have been specifying those.
So there you go, Eric. And again, the name, Kurt, was it?
K-U-R-T, and I believe it's Kurt Building Products. They are out of Minneapolis, but I believe that the panels are still manufactured here in Wisconsin. So it is a Wisconsin product manufactured for Wisconsin's climate.
There you go, Eric. Thank you so much. Let's go to Randy and Marcus Sand next. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I caught your caller with the shingles that were curled up. And I've been a carpenter for 45 years, and I'm actually replacing a roof where the gutter installer has jammed the gutter up so far into the drip edge that it pushed all the shingles up. And so the water was flowing back into the soffit. Actually, it was going into the electrical box.
Oh, good.
Through the walls. Yeah. So I'm redoing this because, you know, that was not safe.
No.
Well, that may be part of the issue. You know, it's hard to say sometimes. I've seen it all, so.
Well, you're certainly correct because we've got 3 to 4 inches on that top part of the drip edge that's nailed to the roof. And if the vertical part is shoved up, that can create a little bit of a dam there. So that is something else that we should inspect for. Thanks for that comment.
Yeah. Keep working, Randy. We need people with that. Your years of experience. And we're losing a lot of people with that many years of experience. So appreciate your call. You know, as long as we're talking about gutters, we've an email, Patrick emailed. He has an older home with what looks like fairly ornate trim. He would rather not put traditional gutters, which may detract from the unique trim work. Any suggestions for other products that might do a similar job as gutters but not detract from the trim?
Well, it's great that we sent a couple pictures. This looks like a great Italianate house from 1876. It's got nice brackets and things. This was an expensive house, Larry. This was a very nice house. This was the local banker. And my guess is that this house has a cistern or had a cistern, and it had gutters originally. Now, from looking at the couple pictures we have, we can't tell for sure, but a house of this quality back then would have had what was called an English gutter or an integral gutter. That is, there would have been a trough actually in the roof.
Oh.
And the way you can find this out is you look at the undersides of the soffit. And in a couple of corners, you'll see a flattened tomato juice can nailed onto the soffit, and that is closing the old hole where the downspout used to come through the soffit. Now, we have restored these integral gutters on old roofs. We've taken off the lower shingles. We found the old decayed wood, rebuilt it. Originally, they were done with lead soldered tin sheets, and as soon as the ice formed, it broke it. So they leaked. So they got rid of them and roofed over them. But now we've got various membranes we can put in there that'll last 25 to 30 years. So we can actually restore those integral gutters. Now, if this house is historic enough to be on the state register or eligible for the state register, one may be able to get a 25% tax credit for the work on that house. So I would suggest that Patrick maybe go to wisconsinhistory.org, go to the right side of the page, click on the green button for historic homeowner tax credit, and do a little investigating there, and then go outside and look up and see if there's a couple places where there's holes in the soffit that are now have been patched, because that is going to prove that we had integral gutters. You may also be able to see them in the attic. Shine a flashlight down through the eaves, and you may see a little wooden box down in the eaves, and that is where your gutters were.
Oh, hey, really interesting. Thanks so much for that, for the photos and that question. Appreciate it. Lynn in Viroqua, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hello there.
What can we do for you?
I have a cedar house, a sided house, and it needs to be restained again. We use semi-transparent stain, and do I need to power wash that or clean that in some way before I actually put new stain on it?
I can give you a firm maybe on that. What we want to do is look two places. First, you want to look at your stain manufacturer. So if it's Cabot Stain, you want to download the installation instructions from Cabot's. If you're unsure, you take a picture, you email Cabot's technical people and say, here's what I've got, what should I do? Number two, go to the website here in Madison for the Forest Products Laboratory. They have all kinds of really nice articles on painting and paint failure and how to paint correctly. I have, I think, a few of those probably on my website, but I would go directly to them, and then if you look at the articles, type in staining cedar siding, my guess is something is going to pop up that'll be useful. So that gives you two good professional sources of information that you can research for free.
There you go. Thank you, Lynn, for calling. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
I've got a very unusual question for you.
Okay.
I didn't even think about it until thinking about like weight loads for snow and stuff. I'm into amateur radio. I've got one tripod in the house. Is there a limit to how many I can put up there without, you know, having issues with weight load and all that good stuff?
How heavy are the tripods?
They're just a standard TV tripod, but I'm putting up a pretty big HF antenna. Oh. It could be a big one, and I'm wondering about wind load and stuff on that. And I'm hitting the beams and stuff underneath, so I'm not concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of rafters? Nick, how old's the house?
It's got to be the 60s.
1960s, okay. So you've got what's called a cut roof, that is, you have wooden rafters, not trusses?
Correct. It's a ranch-style house.
Right. With 2x6s, most likely?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that can be calculated. What you need to do is you need to take the measurements of the house and the size of the rafters. They're probably 16 on center, and you probably need to have somebody. You know, I bet your local lumber yard in Green Bay can do that. You can go up and say, hey, what's my load capacity for this roof? And where you've got tripods coming in, you may want to do some lateral blocking. Again, a lot of the lumber yards have got somebody who is, if they're not, they may not be a structural engineer, but they're a structural technician, and they can design these things for you. And usually that is less expensive than hiring a professional engineer. You can also draw it up, take it to a professional engineer, and they might only charge you an hour to calculate the load capacity of that roof. A couple of things we've got to remember. One is wind load. And the other is just what's called dead load. And Green Bay, I'm gonna have to look at the Uniform Dwelling Code, but you're up in, I think, Zone 2. So you've got to carry an extra 5 pounds more snow than we do down here. I think that you have to have a 40-pound per square foot roof capacity up there. So I would go ahead and get a little bit of professional help on that so you've got a little bit of science behind it, and then go from there.
All right. Good luck, Nick. Thank you very much for calling. Paul in Westby has something for us. Hi, Paul.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. What's on your mind?
I've got a question. I have my garage entry is ICF, and it was the door opening was framed with 2x12 cedar. And I'd like to know if I can, I'd like to make it white if I could cover it up with something or like a fascia. And make it look nicer, or what I should do with it.
Well, you can, but we do not want that cedar in contact with soil because we've got end grain, and that is going to suck up moisture. So if we cover it with aluminum cladding or with a PVC product like AZEK, we could end up with that cedar decaying because it's sucking up moisture. So what you may have to do, since you're going to cover it anyway, is I would cut it up a couple of inches off the ground, put in some PVC or something, then go ahead and wrap it. Then that cedar should be kept completely dry, would not be in contact with the soil, and you should have a 20 to 40 year life out of it if you do a good job of it. Does that make sense?
So I can just cover up with the aluminum as long as it doesn't it can't wick up moisture.
That is correct, and it really a cup 2 inches is really sort of the industry standard to keep that cedar up. And there's a lot of PVCs out there. AZEK makes PVCs in different thicknesses, and that's what your sewer pipes are made of. So obviously they hold, they're impermeable to moisture. So PVC materials, AZEK and others, are absolutely wonderful when we have soil contact going on. So we want to protect that wood before we cover it, so that we don't have nasty things going on in back of cladding. And Larry, this is gives us a chance to comment about all of these houses in the 50s and 60s where the original wood was wrapped in metal.
Mm.
And they are so hard to inspect. And basically, you walk around and you squeeze them. But in so many cases, when the cladding comes off, we find that the windowsills and things underneath are rotten. And that is a great place for water to be getting into first the windowsills, but once the windowsills are gone, into the wall. So if you have one of these houses that has the old metal cladding on it, walk around the windows really carefully, take a good look, and make sure that we do not have leaks going on underneath these wrapped sills. Often they were caulked. The caulk has failed. I looked at one yesterday where we had green moss growing out of the cladding.
Oh.
Aluminum does not support green moss, but decayed wood does. So we really need to inspect houses where we can't see what's rotting. It's much more difficult and all the more important to inspect because it's been covered with something that's impermeable.
There you go, Paul. Thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call. Gary in Stone Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I have a two-story home with cathedral-type ceilings, and I've had water damage from ice backups. The house is fairly new, and the roof is only 10 years old. I had to replace it because of one of those recalls. The problem, the inner ceiling is a flatter slope than the outer roof. So I've got an airspace in between the two.
Right. You have scissors trusses.
I'd like to go in and put in spray foam. And my question is, do I spray over the existing batting at that layer, or do I spray the underside of the upper roof?
Answer to both those questions is no. Don't do that. What you really need to do is you need to get a good spray foam technician in there to rake the insulation back until you can achieve at least R50, or R49 is what the code actually says. I suggest that you really want to have R60. Which means you need 11 inches of space for the spray foam, plus you need 1 inch of space between the spray foam and the underside of the sheathing. And that has to communicate down to your soffit vents because your ice damage is caused by two things. First, radiant loss so that the roof is getting warm, but the roof is getting warm because the venting is not effective enough to remove that warmth. What is supposed to be happening is that air in that outside edge warms. It's supposed to, with just plain air buoyancy, be drawn up towards your ridge vents. Now, you should have ridge vents on that roof. If you don't, you need to add them. So have somebody take a look at that. Talk to your insulation contractor. Hopefully you find somebody fairly knowledgeable who understands this. But say, look, I want you to look at my venting, and I want you to look at the insulation, and I want to try to achieve R60 up here. Once you achieve R60 and you have good venting, you will never have an ice dam again.
That sounds like good news for Gary. Thank you, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Vivian in Green Bay. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I have a little bit of an argument with someone about the staining on a concrete wall about 6 or 8 inches up from the floor, from the concrete floor. And people are telling me that that is signs of previous water damage, And I thought I had heard somewhere that it's caused by a chemical interaction.
Mm-hmm. Now, Vivian, is this in your basement?
Yes.
Okay. And is the stain white or is it brown?
Oh, a brownish gray.
A brownish gray. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's more gray than anything. My home is 1957.
Uh-huh.
Poured concrete.
Poured concrete. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
okay. A couple of things to look at. This could be what we call efflorescence, which is salts and calcium carbonate and other chemicals that are drawn in by water vapor, not liquid water. But, you know, concrete is a really, really heavy form of sponge. You know, water vapor does go through it. One way to tell is to wash it, and wash it with a light vinegar solution. If it all dissolves, well, then it's probably calcium carbonate and salt, because that light vinegar solution, and use a white vinegar, not a red, will simply dissolve with that. If it is sort of like flame-shaped, that is sort of irregular, and it appears in some areas and not in other areas, that's another sign that it's efflorescence. And all that is you've got high soil moisture. Sometimes of the year, we get some water vapor through and it deposits these chemicals and isn't causing much harm. But if that's happening, we want to think about, you know, this sort of goes back to our program 2 months ago. How do we dry out the soil outside the wall? Well, number one, make sure our gutters are working well, our downspouts are extended, and then number two, let's look at the grading to get the surface water away. Does that make sense?
Oh, it sure does. Yes, I have a lot of clay in the neighborhood, and yeah.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
Well, do that little test with the white vinegar, and then what you can do is simply wash the entire basement. Just take a mop and wash those walls, get rid of it, and if it starts reappearing, like if it reappears in the northwest corner, well, you know the northwest corner downspout needs to go further from the house. So that efflorescence is nice. It's a tracking thing. When we are inspecting homes, we're looking for everything we can find. And when we're looking at masonry and concrete, efflorescence is what tells us what's going on.
Oh, there you go, Vivian. Thank you so much for calling. And Rick in Berlin, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Yes, thank you. I'm calling about a stucco home with a clay tile roof. And the drain, it didn't have a gutter put on the front of the house, and so the drain from the orange clay tile has stained the stucco.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at, we can't clean it mm-hmm. because it's absorbed into the stucco, so we have to either live with it or we're going to put up a gutter, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah.
And now the question is, and there seems to be a kind of a raging debate in the trades community. Some folks saying don't ever paint a stucco house if you can help it.
Those people are right.
Yeah, other people, you know, because it doesn't breathe and all this stuff. And then other folks are saying the new generation of elastomeric paints do a really nice job and they're easier to keep clean and so forth. So I'm debating, I haven't gotten cost estimates yet, but between skim coating that the house or painting it.
Mm-hmm.
Or obviously live with it, but we'd kind of like to clean it up.
Yeah. Rick, how old is your house?
It is 10 years old.
Oh, it's only 10 years. So it's actual hard coat stucco, or is it exterior insulation finish system, thin coat?
I believe that it's the panel system.
Okay, so it's foam panels, right? And then with the foam panels have two layers, a base layer and then a top layer of Merltex or one of the other brands of I think it's a vinyl fortified cement coating. Is that right?
And it's got the coloration is built into the stucco.
Is built into it, yes. Okay. All right. That's a whole different beast than stucco. We call that EIFS, you know, EIFS. And so that's very different than traditional stucco. And yes, indeed, you can paint that. We find 90% of those systems fail within 10 years. So it's very good to really keep an eye on it and look for any type of staining. You can go over it. There are different types of paint you can use. Do you know what brand it is? Is it Dryvit or?
I don't. I've got to find that out.
Yeah, obviously. Find that out. And then let's say it's Dryvit. You can go to Dryvit Technical Support, send them a picture, say, here's what I've got. What would you cover this with? They will answer you. They also would be able to send you the color sheets, Well, you can get those online, actually. And you can go, oh, well, this is Bahama Brown or Sierra Sand or whatever, because I only want to do the front. I don't want to do the whole house. So do a little bit of investigation. Locate and define what your product is. Talk to their technical people. Do it by email so you've got it. Save all of that stuff. Just as general advice again, Larry. Mm-hmm. You're going to, let's say, you know, you're going to sell the house in 5 years, and the home inspector is going to go, well, why was this recovered? Well, you've got all that stuff then in your portfolio. Well, it was Dryvit or it was Merltex. Here's a thing from technical support. It's just some staining. Here's a picture before I did it. I wasn't covering up any defect. I was just maintaining it. Anybody who owns an Eaves house has to be really vigilant. I hope you've got big overhangs on the house and keep a real close eye on the caulking around all of the penetrations to make sure it stays tight. The problem with it, Larry, is if we get water behind it, it can't breathe out.
Ah.
And often it's put over oriented strand board. And so we've had these houses where it has turned into just a disaster. Now, people are getting better about putting it on because the industry got tired of the lawsuits. But still, we want to always be vigilant if we own that sort of house. I tell people do an annual inspection, or better yet, walk around in the spring and walk around in the fall and make sure you don't see anything that looks peculiar. Check all of your caulk joints and make sure that they're tight.
There you go, Rick. Thank you so much for calling. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement and repair today with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. We have many callers online. We have some emails. So let's go back to the phones here next and to Edward in Milwaukee. Hi, Edward.
Hey. I've got a 1928 bungalow that I'd like to build in the upper attic area, but I also have a new roof that I need to put on. Mm-hmm. And what recommendations that you would have? I would been thinking about doing the spray foam, but you know, the hot roof and concern, and that is something that I wanted to consider as well, and getting enough insulation in that area.
Right. That's always the problem with the bungalows, because they're, you know, the idea was they were to be lightweight homes. Most of them have just 2x4s for rafters. Some of them have 2x6s. But even if we have a 2x6 and we use spray foam, we're only at about R30. So we're about half of what I recommend. So we talked earlier about the energy panels, the roofing energy panels, which are vented now, so that if you have a company that say we do not warrant our shingles on hot roofs, you don't have that problem. So you may wish to take a look at that. Now, they work best where we've got fairly simple roofs. You know, some bungalows have got dormers everywhere, and some of them are our basic two-pitch roof. How complicated is your roof, Edward?
I have dormers on each side, four sides.
Okay. So, and what size are the rafters? Do you know, are they 2x4 or 2x6?
They are 2x6.
Yeah, good. Okay, so we're at R30. With the interior finishes and things, if we figure the air layer next to it, et cetera, we're probably in the mid-30s. So if we could add 4 inches of foam on the top without really running into architectural issues with the dormers, then we can get a really nice roof on there. The other nice thing about it is it's going to be air-sealed. So a lot of your heat loss, in fact, perhaps 40% of the heat loss from your house right now is due to air movement leaking out. But between the spray foam and the foam on top of the roof, it's going to be like you've taken a giant igloo styrofoam cooler and put it over the top of your house. Nothing's going to get out. No air is going to move. Heat's not going to move. And you're going to have a huge savings. Now, I don't know in Milwaukee. I think in Milwaukee that the utilities there are with Focus on Energy. Focus on Energy has some programs. I think one of them is if you can reduce the utilities by 30%, you're looking at a couple $1,000s in rebates. So be sure to go to Focus on Energy, see if your local utility participates. Not all in the state do. Most public utilities, as corporates do, some of the co-ops don't. But be sure to take a look at the rebates that may be possible, and then talk to a contractor who really knows this sort of stuff. And again, you can go and take a look at these panels at KURT, Kurt Building Products, I believe it is, and get some information from them. And if we have to already put a roof on, that's great.
Yeah, there you go, Edward. Thank you very much for calling. And Christina in Glenwood City will go to you next. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is, I just want to confirm that I heard you correctly. Did you say that pure straight white vinegar cleans calcium carbonate from concrete?
You don't have to use it straight. You can just do sort of a vinegar solution. But yes, the vinegar will simply dissolve. Well, haven't you ever taken your coffee maker and you've got, you know, the filter or something, you drop it in some vinegar to de-lime it? So it's really the same thing. It's like, you know, Lime Away and those sorts of products are really sort of like a vinegar-based. But most people have got a jug of vinegar in the house for pickling or whatever. But, you know, mix a fairly strong solution, experiment a little bit, and, you know, use maybe a soft bristle brush or one of those little green scrubbies. And if it is indeed a calcium carbonate and salt-based efflorescence, the water will dissolve the salt and the vinegar will dissolve the calcium carbonate.
Great. Thank you for that. Okay, so my real question is, we're going to install a new deck about 3 feet above the ground. So I'm looking for advice about how to prepare the base for good drainage and weed prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Can you use driveway gravel or should you have black soil? What are your recommendations or your advice?
Well, as long as there's some pitch away from the house, I don't see any problem with putting down an 8 or 10 mil plastic barrier that simply stops everything, and then putting a nice edge around that. I really like washed stone. The problem with gravel is if you get a lot of rain, those fines can run out. But the washed stone, which any landscaper can provide for you and deliver, put over a barrier, is going to work, I think, pretty nicely. Just make sure you've got the half-inch per foot slope away from the house. So if this is a 12-foot deck, you want to have 6 inches of slope at the end of the deck coming down from that foundation wall. Also, when you're building a deck, go to American Wood Council. Download the Deck Code Conformance pamphlet. Well, it's a small book. Print a copy, give another copy to your deck builder, and say, this is how we need to have it done. The American Wood Council has put this together. It's also available at our website, educatedhomeowner.net. And I think it's under decks there. So let's make sure if we're putting this deck in that it is all done correctly and to code.
And I would also put something in to keep the raccoons and possum and everything else from getting underneath the deck.
That's why we like to have a nice edge. And the edge depends upon what you've got, what critters you've got in the neighborhood as far as the type of edge that you put in. But that's a good point, Larry.
And in fact, it caused me to take off the deck that I had in the existing deck that came with the home and put in a cement patio.
Ah.
There you go, Christina. Thank you so much. Sharon in Monona Bay, hello.
Hi, Neil. How are you? I'm sorry. Hi, Larry. I get Larry Mueller and Neil Heinen mixed up. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, Sharon. What's on your mind today?
In order to be environmentally responsible, I thought about putting in our brand new double concrete driveway. We need to replace it. And so putting a big center strip with grass so to absorb the water.
Mm-hmm.
Then this concrete driveway abuts the house, mm-hmm. the house foundation. Then I was reading that if you put in a rain garden, which this wouldn't be, but if you put in a rain garden, you should definitely make sure it's at least 50 yards or 50 feet from your foundation. And I thought, well, is this a big mistake, thinking I'm doing something good by having the center of my driveway all grass, or is it just going to promote more flooding in our basement, which we experienced this past year?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at this. One is, rather than use concrete and a strip of grass, which is hard to maintain, is take a look at permeable pavers or permeable asphalt or permeable concrete. And there are various people in Madison who will put that in. What's nice about that is the sheet flow runs down the driveway, so you don't get the soil saturated. But the light rain will end up going through so that you are going to reduce the amount of runoff. But when it's really the 3-inch downpour, that is going to head out to the gutter. So I would take a look at permeable paving, and there's at least 3 different types. I think if you Google it, that'll get you started.
Sounds like a plan to me. Is that good for you, Sharon?
Yes, that's great. I appreciate the information.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today, and we have open lines now, so we can get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And again, I want to mention educatedhomeowner.net is the website that John essentially put up for Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. If you go to that, I think it'll direct you to John's website, and then from there you can just click on it and get to the information you need. We are going to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet, and then we'll be back with John. So you stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, visiting today with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates as we talk about home renovation and repair. We've zeroed in a little bit on above ground water leakage around your home, but we've taken other questions as well. A couple of emails. The email address, by the way, is ideas@wpr.org. Kathy emailed that they thought that a steel roof would solve the leaky roof situation, but it has solved most of the problems. However, there's still a leak around the fieldstone chimney. They live in a 90-year-old whole log cabin. Are there any new caulking products that can solve this problem?
Simple answer again, Larry, no. Now, the question that we can't ask Kathy is, how old is this chimney? I doubt whether it's original fieldstone. It'd be pretty amazing if it was. Generally,
Larry, it's 90-year-old.
90-year-old house, but yeah. Was the chimney added? Oh. It's hard to believe that a chimney would last for 90 years for fieldstone, which is the round stones, you know, what we saw in the old dairy barn foundations that had to be slip formed. Now, generally, we know that all stone leaks, so it takes in water. So we could caulk the heck out of the outside of this where the stone meets the roof. But the problem is the water is going down inside the chimney itself. So what we really need to do is we need to have a mason come in. Now, if this is a newer fieldstone chimney, say the last 50, 60 years, there's probably a concrete or a brick interior. We can take the fieldstone off. We can waterproof that interior. We can flash it onto the roof. And then we can apply the fieldstone as a veneer. Now, if that isn't the case, if it's solid stone, I think what we want to do is cut it off at the roof. Then we want to put in an interior of most likely brick or concrete masonry units and then apply the fieldstone and a good cap. It'll look exactly like it does now, except it'll be waterproofed behind the veneer. And that's where we need to waterproof homes in Wisconsin, behind the veneer, whether it is siding, whether it's stucco, whether it's EIFS, whether it's stone, whether it's brick.
Kurt in Deerfield emailed to ask ask what is the best mortar to use to replace the old crumbling mortar between the stone of fieldstone basement walls. Would a product like Menards called vinyl patch cement work?
No, we don't want to use vinyl patch. Now, Kurt said old. We don't know how old, but we're going to assume this is probably pre-1910. And it could be fieldstone or it could be what we call quarry rubble, which is sandstone or limestone. And those were laid up in that period with a lime-based mortar. And on the website, educatedhomeowner.net, go to masonry and then click on mortars. And there are 2 articles on mortars. And one of them has all the specifications for mixing mortar to repair your stone foundation. And I've got to tell you, Larry, this is a case where you can do it yourself. Because the mortar specification I have, we call it a good throwing mortar. If you toss it at the wall, it'll stick. So if you follow those specifications, you can actually repair your own or infill the joints in your old stone foundations, inside and out.
Save some money that way. Paula in Wausau, we will give you a chance now. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have a question about, I think it was a hunting shack that we're actually rehabbing that is down the hill from our cottage. We want to basically turn it into a wood shop slash studio and a place for overfill when all our family shows up. Anyways, the original foundation is like a 6-inch hand poured concrete, and it's in pretty solid shape. I have no idea when it was built. But what I was wondering is right now there's a water issue. So we did do some stone and drainage tile around the perimeter recently. But where the wall meets the concrete, I was wondering what we might do to ensure that there's no more water coming through from that area.
Okay. That's a pretty easy one. We've designed lots of these, especially where the foundation is quite basically has a lot of soil on it, so the siding is very close to the grade. So basically what we do is we take a bit of the siding off the framed wall, and we dig down a foot or so, and then we put on a peel-and-stick waterproof membrane. Now, that's going to do two things. First, it's not going to let any water get in there, and secondly, it's going to be an air barrier. Then, depending upon how far you are above grade, the siding can go within 6 inches of the grade. If the siding is closer to the grade, then we suggest you put on something like AZEK, a PVC thing. You can make that look like a water course, you know, which a lot of houses had water courses.
Sure.
Run that around the house. But the peel and stick membrane that connects at least a foot of concrete to a foot of the frame wall is going to give you a really nice air barrier down there. Now, the other thing to think of is that while you're at this, and we're doing a little digging, maybe let's dig a little bit deeper and let's add some closed cell foam insulation so that that foundation doesn't get cold if you're going to be using this in the winter. So that could be added, then you can put in a ground break. So think it out a little bit, do a little bit of reading, try to thermally isolate it and protect it from water and protect it from air infiltration. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the peel and stick though, it's only 6 inches deep, the foundation.
Oh,
the
only 6 inches deep. Wow, that's not much foundation, is it? Wow. Well, then you go down 6 inches. So you dig out 6 inches, you clean the concrete as best you can, and then put the peel and stick on. The problem is we got this little tiny joint, and like you said, it was hand poured, so it wasn't dead level on the top. They weren't using a laser to finish it. So you've got all kinds of little waves and lumps and bumps where that wood is trying to mate to the concrete, and it can't. So that's why we've got to put an exterior barrier on there. We can't get in there with caulks or foams and really do a good job.
All right. There you go, Paula. Thank you. Carol in Cedarburg.
Hi. I have a house that was built in 1971. It's kind of a split level, has about 1,600 square feet. I've had three guys come to inspect it and has two layers of roofing that needs to be removed. I've had three different estimates, anywhere from $8,500 to $14,000. I eliminated the guy that didn't look in the attic, but when I look at the proposals, the other two look very similar. I guess I'm wondering, what questions should I ask and how can I tell the difference between the $9,500 job and the $14,000 job?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things we can ask for. First, we want to have their certificates of insurance. We want to make sure that they are insured for liability and workman's comp. You can ask, what associations are you members of? Are you a member of NARI, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry? Because a lot of these associations have higher standards for members than just the plain old industry standard. Ask them what kind of education they have and ask them for at least three references. The other thing you can do is you can go to Simple Case Search and you can type in their corporate names and see if anyone has sued them. What's nice about Wisconsin, if you've been sued in Wisconsin, everybody knows about it because they can go to Simple Case Search and look it up. So do a little bit of checking on them. And make sure that you study the warranties that they are offering. And how long have they been in business? Is it just a very short time? Have they gone bankrupt 3 years ago and now they're back again under a different name or the same name? So some online research, a few phone calls, and then asking for a few more details. And just say to them truthfully, look, you guys are really close. Tell me why I should hire you. What do you have for insurance? Do you have completed job insurance? So that if there's a problem 5 years from now and you've passed on or something, that I've got some sort of recourse. So think of everything you can possibly ask and then ask them in a very polite way, and one of them will probably seem to be superior to the others.
There you go. Carol, thank you. Kathleen in Minneapolis, hello.
Hi there. Thank you for sharing all this information, John. I have a house that was built in 1893, and it has a partial basement, which I think is probably limestone or what you maybe refer to as quarry rubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's been coated on the inside with something to make the wall smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And in places, that's granulating and popping off.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something I can do about that, and do I need to worry about it?
That depends. First, what is the color of the stuff on the inside, white or gray?
The interior of the material that's popping off, you mean?
No, what is the material that was applied over the stone, the plaster or parging? What is the color of the parging?
I think it's white. It's been
white.
Painted, but I think the interior is also white.
Okay.
But I think the stuff on the material itself is also white.
Okay. If the material is white, we can hope that it's actually lime-based and that therefore that it is breathing moisture through. Now, again, you can do the vinegar thing. You can take some vinegar down there and put it on a rag and rub it. And if the plaster starts dissolving, it's not Portland cement. We don't want Portland cement in these old basements. Then it is a lime type. If it is a lime type, you can simply mix lime putty plaster and you can repair as you go. In fact, you can use the formula that I have on Educated Homeowner for the mortar and just mix it a little bit thicker and patch as you go. But it's real important that these walls be allowed to breathe, because what happens if you put Portland cement, which doesn't breathe, over old-fashioned lime mortar is the lime mortar holds tannic acids and moisture from the soil and completely deteriorates. So try to figure out exactly what this material is. If you have to, you might have to chip off a little bit and send it to a lab, and they'll do a couple of chemical tests, and they'll tell you exactly what it is, whether it's Portland-based, lime-based, or maybe it has a little Portland and mostly lime. They can even tell you how permeable it is. But it sounds like it's worth doing a little bit of investigation.
There you go, Kathleen. Thank you for calling. And Curtis in Marshfield, your turn now. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. My question is, I have a house probably late 50s, early 60s. The basement was finished at one time, but I have since removed or unfinished it. And I got water that'll come up through the cracks of the floor and then around my sewer pipes.
Sure.
It's not coming in through the walls at all. Mm-hmm. I do have the trenched drains around the outside, and I don't have any issues with that. It's strictly coming up through the floor.
Yeah. You've got what's called hydrostatic head pressure. It's basically your basement floor is below where the water table is, because our soils are so saturated now. And about the only thing one can do is retrofit an interior sump pump and drain tile system. You know, you're a few thousand dollars. It's not terrible. There's a lot of different companies that do it now. Again, like Carol, be very careful about who you hire, what they have for a warranty. A lot of places give you a 10-year warranty on it. Make sure that the sump pump is wired correctly with its own GFCI outlet, etc. But that will break up the water and prevent it from coming in. I still would not ever finish that basement, but at least you won't have the water on the floor.
There you go, Curtis. Thank you again. Wade in Trempealeau, your turn. Hi, Wade.
Hello. Say, I live in town here, and I acquired some land out in the country, and I want to put up some type of a cabin, small home kind of thing. But it turns out the property has a pole barn that's in really good shape, fairly new, and I'm wondering about the option of building some type of walls and structure inside the pole barn, turning that in. Some people are doing that, and I'm wondering what John thinks of that concept.
Oh, I love that. We actually moved an old dairy barn. But what we had to do is this is going to be habitable space, so it's going to have to meet code, which means it has to take 20-pound wind loads, et cetera. So you are probably going to need a design professional to give you some help. Now, you may be able to do that again at the local lumber yard if they've got a design professional there, a structural technician. You may have to talk to a structural engineer. You may have to talk to an architect. But to get a permit for this, you are going to make sure that this meets the Uniform Dwelling Code. So I think it's a great idea. Now, one of the things you can think of is you can use – we've been talking about these roof panels. We mentioned that there's also wall panels available. You can use these structural insulated panels on the walls. And maybe you may have to do some bracing or add a little bit of timber to the timber frame. But you could have something pretty neat with the old timbers actually exposed on the interior. But you've got to have a design professional to really help you with this. Don't try this yourself.
Okay, there
you can build it yourself, but don't design it yourself.
All right, Wade, there you go. Thank you for calling. And let's go to David in La Crosse next. Hi, David.
Yes, good morning to you both. I have a one-story addition to my home that has about a 15-year-old rubber membrane roof. I would like to rail it off and use it as a deck. And I'm wondering if I noticed on the internet now that there are any number of rubber pads that could be used.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want to put, a traditional wooden deck up there.
Right, and you shouldn't, because a treated deck will destroy the EPDM like you wouldn't believe. And even a cedar deck with tannic acids will damage the EPDM. But you are correct. These rubber mats, the one that – they've changed the name of the company. It used to be called PlayGuard. And I think if you Google PlayGuard, it'll still come up. 2-foot by 2-foot mats that clip together. What's great, someday you're going to have to replace that rubber roof. Well, you can just unclip these mats, stack them in the garage, replace the roof, and put them back down. Remember that you need to have code-conforming railings up there. Those railings have to take a 200-pound lateral load. Now, that means probably bringing a roofer in to put boots around the supports for the railing. Now, then you got to think about this. You got 15 years on an EPDM roof with a 20-year life. If we're going to do this, maybe we should just go ahead and get rid of that EPM and put on a thermoplastic or something with a longer life and then put on the, put the railings on with that. So, rather than try to disassemble everything in 5 years and sort of hodgepodge boots and supports for the railings in now, maybe just bite the bullet and put the new roof on, even though this one isn't completely worn out. When you put the new roof on, be sure to check how you are flashed where the roof meets the siding, because if this is put on 15 years ago, it may not be correctly flashed. So you may need to pull a little siding off. So get somebody who really knows what they're doing. Then once you get that done, you should have a 25-year life out of that.
Yeah, there you go, David. Thank you. Nancy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I have a duplex, and there is a tiny 4x5-foot porch off of the upstairs kitchen of this duplex. Years ago, I had the old wood railings replaced with aluminum railings.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, the floorboards of this porch are really rotten. I would not go out there myself. Can the railings be taken off and the floorboards substituted with a new kind of board that will not require any upkeep forevermore, and then the railings reattached?
Yes.
And what would that flooring be?
Well, I would look at a PVC product. Again, AZEK, A-Z-E-K, would be one I would look at. You can find that online. Your local building center is going to have samples of it. It comes in different colors. What's nice about the AZEK, number one, it's PVC, so it is never going to rot. Number two is the color is all the way through it. So if you scratch it, it's not like we've got – some of the older materials had cellulose fiber on the interior, and once you scratch the vinyl cover, they would swell up, or you would see what was inside. The AZEK is solid color. Now, there's others out there also that are solid color, but look for a PVC. Now, the only problem that we have is those railings have to take the 200-pound load, as we just mentioned, I think, to David. So we may have to add some wood blocking. So when you're doing this and taking this apart, be sure your carpenter inspects the frame of that porch to make sure everything is nice and secure. add some blocking so that the screws for the railing or the bolts go through the AZEC into wood framing so that that railing, if somebody leans on it or bumps it hard, Nancy, is not going to break loose. And again, if this is done right, you know, 20-year life should be the minimum for a good project.
There you go, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Eileen in Waterford emailed. She lives in an old farmhouse that has a cement front porch, and the porch is cracked and sinking around those cracks. The base is fieldstone, and the mortar is cracking. So far, everything else looks stable. Any idea what is under the cement porch topping? Will this require a tear out and some type of replacement? Also, this house has the original asbestos shingles, so far no leaks are found.
Mm-hmm.
Can she use roll insulation inside the attic without getting a new roof?
Okay. First, on the porch, we have no idea what's under there, but I think generally if we've got something that old and it's moving, let's deconstruct and start with something new. And then the question is, what is the new? Do we really want to use concrete again? If this is an old house, maybe something that is made of wood and PVC is going to look better. May want to talk to a design professional about getting something that looks good. Or, you know, go online, look at pictures of houses, find something that really works. But I think if the concrete is moving, then we may have some soil issues. We don't want to pour more concrete on top of that. If we do pour concrete, we either have to have a floating slab not attached to the house, or we have to dig and put in frost walls, and it starts getting expensive. So maybe consult with a local carpenter who might have some good ideas. As far as the attic, don't use rolled insulation. Rolled insulation is not terribly effective in attics where it's loose laid because you can never get it tight enough. If you've not had an energy inspection done in your house, have an energy inspection done. You want to measure, and we've talked about this to several other people here, that up to 40% of the heat loss in older houses is due to air leakage, the air buoyancy going up. So you want to have that tested. So you need a blower door test for that. And what you may find is that you need to do some air sealing in the attic, and then the insulation that is probably the cheapest and the best bang for the buck is just plain old high-density cellulose that has been treated with a fire retardant. So you should be able to have a good reduction in your energy bill if you do it right. Again, I don't know where you are as far as or whether your utility is part of Focus on Energy. But certainly look at find out if your utility is part of Focus on Energy. If it is, take a look at the rebates that are available for improving your insulation.
There you go, Eileen. Thank you so much for calling. And, John, we're about out of time here. And let's go back to your website again. It is
educatedhomeowner.net or freibergerconsulting.net. And we have quite a bit up there. There's always more to put up. And see what you can find by clicking on the various folders for masonry or siding. And we will try in the near future, Larry, if I was a little less busy. I have all kinds of things I want to put up, but I just haven't gotten them there yet.
But there's a lot up there so far.
There is a lot up there. A lot of things we talked about today, especially with the masonry. We've got that pretty well covered. We've got pretty good coverage for the decks, and we're adding more and more for siding.
John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison, our guest. By the way, full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of our WPR many business sponsors, so appreciate that as well. And appreciate you listening. Garden Talk tomorrow. Looking forward to that. The inventor of the straw bale garden joins us. Stay with us.